McNabb stepping in for the Knights. He scores! Walked right out in front, and Braden McNabb, you read his lips, he just said wow himself. Eakin on the right sidewall, coming up to the slot. Lots of room, Eakin shoots and scores! Second goal of the game for Cody Eakin. Right circle, Schmidt threw it across the net mouth. In front, stop, another try, score! Tatar! Reeves in the right side to the right circle, centering feed, a shot, they score! Belmar fires from between the circles. Marchessault peels off on the right wing near side. To the slot, he shoots, he scores! Marchessault! 4-3 Knights! Vegas wins in overtime!
And welcome in. Good hump day Wednesday. What a day it is. Vegas Golden Knights continue to just rewrite the record books for the NHL. Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Frank Harnish, Clayton Hamilton, Chris Chapman. Clayton and I had a great time last night over at the Parkway Tavern. We'd like to thank Chris and Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Helen Yee for all the hard work they were doing at Staples Center in Los Angeles. And Clayton, what a night it was. Is the confetti out of your binder and your hair yet?
Out of the hair, not out of the binder. I keep finding it between pages, but it was great. Fun memory last night, and I don't know about you, Frank, but I know we had some early stuff to do here at the office yesterday. We got here about 8:15, 8:30 or so, got done, wrapped up at Parkway Tavern about 1 o'clock in the morning, and when I got home, I couldn't sleep. I was wired. I could not settle down because of how much fun I had yesterday.
No, I mean, I'll be honest. I went home, I watched the replay of the game. Then I was watching NHL Network and watching their breakdown and analysis of the game. And then I finally went to bed and tossed and turned for a little while, got up and watched some more NHL Network, and then finally went to bed. So, but hey, you know what?
It was fun.
What a great ride it's been, and just so happy that it's still going on. And I know a lot of people out there, and we touched on this yesterday, and I get it. There's a lot of new fans, a lot of novice fans out there who wanted Vegas to lose last night so they could win at T-Mobile Arena. Didn't understand it then, but in hindsight, even those people, I would imagine today are going, you know what? It is better that it ended this way. To sweep the LA Kings, to win the last game in Staples Center, to shut Drew Doughty and company up, and to have Braden McNabb score the game winner once again. The theme that's been all year long, that this is too good to be true and it's too corny for a Disney movie or something, to do it in Los Angeles. This story just keeps on getting better and better.
It does. And I was thinking last night after the game was over and we were wrapping up at Parkway Tavern, I was thinking about Ryan, and I was thinking about Chris Chapman. And they had that long, arduous drive back through the desert. And I was thinking to myself, I was like, you know, Chapman, that is a crap drive. But I can only imagine that last night was about as fun and as fast and as sweet a drive through the desert as you've ever had returning from L.A.
Actually, I came back this morning. So it was a little more fun because I passed some cars on the way that had Golden Knights stickers in the window. So, I wouldn't have seen them had I been driving at night because I probably wouldn't have been able to see the windows. But, I drove back this morning and came right here from – I haven't even gone home. I jumped on the road about 9 o'clock in – I stayed in Alhambra, not too far from downtown L.A., but as my microphone is going to fall over here. But, it was a good drive. It wasn't too bad. But, yeah, the drive there sucked because I was hitting like 50-mile-an-hour headwinds. So I got terrible gas mileage. I had to stop in Barstow and fill up. I get 300 miles a tank, and I had to stop in Barstow and fill up. So that tells you how bad it was driving there. But that was fun. I mean, being there last night was really incredible.
Now, you were there last night at Staples Center. Clayton and I were at Parkway Tavern. All season long, we talked about how the fan base at T-Mobile Arena was always well represented from the opposing team. It seemed to go down a little bit as the season went on. And then, of course, once the playoffs started, the first two games against the Kings, even though LA is just 300 miles away, you had to really struggle to find a Kings jersey there. How was the fan contingent for the Vegas Golden Knights in Staples Center? Because you could hear them chanting.
Yeah, there was actually a couple of Vegas fans in front of us. One guy brought a broom with him, and after the game, an old woman in a Kings jersey turned around and lectured him on sportsmanship. But I got a good chuckle out of that. But we knew during the national anthem that there were a lot of Vegas fans there. First of all, going into Staples, I saw a lot of people in Golden Knights gear, which is always cool. But during the national anthem, much like they do here when they chant night during the Star-Spangled Banner, last night during the Star-Spangled Banner, when they got to that part, it was loud. And so loud that Kings fans started booing during the national anthem. So
and they're going to lecture our fans about sportsmanship,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, I mean, they literally they started booing, and it was like... And some of the players had said that they could tell that there were a lot of Vegas fans there. They could hear them. You know, they definitely knew that they were represented. And, I mean, this team, I mean, if you're anywhere on social media, the way that they're taking over this town. Frank, you were here when UNLV was in the Sweet 16 a couple years ago. It was about a decade ago with Lon Kruger.
I had just moved out here when UNLV won the national championship.
And I wasn't here for that, but I was here during the Lon Kruger years when they were good. And it's pretty comparable in terms of, in fact, I'd probably say it's even greater now because we have more people, and this is a professional team. That's Vegas's professional team, and it's truly, you know, I heard a guy this morning driving in on with Clay, and he said he was a lifelong Boston Bruins fan, says he's a Red Sox fan. He DVR'd Shohei Ohtani pitching against the Red Sox last night so he could watch the Golden Knights game live.
And, you know, that's
the way this team has taken over the city.
Well, John Griffin, who is one of the biggest baseball fans in this building, maybe the biggest. I mean, that is the sport that he loves more than anything. He said that he was torn last night between going back and forth between a potential no-hitter in the Diamondbacks baseball game and the Golden Knights, and he finally basically had to watch the Golden Knights in that, and then he was upset that the no-hitter got crushed. But how can you not watch this team? And it's not just Vegas, and it's not just the West Coast, and it's not just the United States. This team has literally taken over. I truly think it's the biggest story in sports, which for hockey is incredibly difficult to say because generally hockey doesn't get that much love from most of the national media and everything else with all the other sports going on. But you can't deny what's going on here, and you can't not hear about it or be interested in it, because if you don't care at all, then I'm sorry, you're not a sports fan at all.
And what was proof of that was last night at Parkway Tavern, there was an overtime game between Columbus and Washington that was going on at the same time the Golden Knights game started. Ohtani was pitching against the Red Sox for the Angels. The Dodgers and the Padres were playing, so we actually got it on TV here, as well as the NBA playoffs. Every single TV was turned to the Golden Knights, not a single other sporting event, and there was no complaining. There was nobody that was like, hey, I want this other game. The whole bar was Golden Knights.
Even all the booths that have their individual TVs that could have turned it on a different game because they have the capability still had it on the Knights game. And the thing that I love about it, it kind of makes me laugh, but I also think it's kind of charming, and I love the ambiance of it and everything. When the crowd starts chanting, beat L.A., and when they ooh and ah with every save and every shot, and they're going, go Knights, going that, like they're in the stadium, like the players can hear them, like the referees can hear when they make a bad call or something like that. It's almost like it's a surreal thing and an out-of-body experience that sometimes I just kind of look and go, you know they can't hear you because they're in Los Angeles, right? But I love the passion and everything that people have for it. I can't even say they're on the edge of their seats because most of them are standing the entire time.
There were beat LA chants at Staples Center last night. I mean, we were wondering what the fans were going to say. And you know, at the beginning of the game, the Kings, I mean, come on, really? They showed a little video of Eric Cartman from South Park come out in a Kings jersey. And they had Kenny in a Golden Knights jersey. And they used the 1998 joke, respect my authority. That joke hasn't been funny in almost 20 years, and that's what the Kings are using to pump their crowd up. I mean, we you know, this is our house, and I could hear some Vegas fans yelling, this is our house, this is our house. And I mean, the rivalry is definitely there already, but I can't imagine how much more this city can go in on this team, because I mean, are we going to get to a point where, like, you're driving down the strip and the game is on the marquee at, like, the MGM or the Cosmo?
Well, it's already on the outside of T-Mobile. Yeah. I mean, it's not just on the big screen out in Toshiba Plaza. It's on the big – when you walk by T-Mobile, you see the game.
And I think William Carlson summed it up best last night during his interview when he was talking about Braden McNabb getting the game-winning goal and saying how fitting it was for him to do it against his old team, against the team that didn't believe in him, that shook their head at his talent. And I think that's what the Golden Knights fans have done to the rest of the sport world, who shook their heads at them and said, you'll never support this team, you'll never understand hockey, you'll never be real, true, passionate fans. And they went into this season, this fan base, with a chip on their shoulder, just like their team, and they have proved how worthy they are of a franchise.
Yeah, absolutely, they're worthy of the franchise. And the other thing that is amazing to me is it's hard to get lifetime fans of an organization to change alliances. Nothing against the Raiders, but when the Raiders come here, they already have a fan base and they have a lot of haters. The Golden Knights had no haters to begin with, but they did have to contend with, okay, well, the younger generation will probably gravitate towards us, but the other people are still going to be fans of their teams. I have heard so many people, and I know we've all heard so many people tell us, it's like, look, I still like so-and-so, but I'm a Golden Knights fan. And, of course, the people that weren't hockey fans before that have now watching it, and they watch every regular season game, and they're on the edge of their seat during the playoff games, and that, of course, this is their team because they didn't have a team before. But even the teams, I'm from Chicago, I know a ton of Blackhawk fans that are now Golden Knights fans. Kings fans are Golden Knights fans. Ducks fans, it's all across the board. You still might watch your other team, but you cheer for the Vegas Golden Knights. And I've seen that all over the place. I have to admit, when the Golden Knights play Chicago, I thought I was going to be torn. I root for Vegas.
Yeah, we've seen that just in this room. You with Chicago. We've seen the transformation. Ryan with L.A., Chapman with the Devils, me with the Blue Jackets. That it doesn't matter. Like when they blanked Columbus here at T-Mobile Arena, I could not have been happier with every single goal.
When they played Chicago, and that was one of the few games that we did here from the studio and not at Born and Raised or Parkway Tavern, which, by the way, Parkway Tavern, we will be at one of their fine locations throughout the rest of the playoffs for all the road games. But when they played the Blackhawks, and we were in the studio here doing the game, and the Blackhawks tied that game up, I remember looking and going, well, I can't say exactly what I said because I don't want to have Chris to use the delay. And I literally turned around like, wait a second, where did that come from? And it was me saying it, and I couldn't believe the word. Forget about the words coming out of my mouth. The fact that the thought even entered my brain. I couldn't imagine being upset that the Blackhawks scored a goal in a game. And yet I was. And I think it's because we've got to know these guys. I think it's because we genuinely like the guys because they truly are the type and quality of people that George McPhee and Bill Foley and Gerard Gallant said they were going to be. But I also think it's just because they're such darn good hockey players that play with the passion, thirst, and lust for the game that we wish that all athletes played for every game. It's not about the paycheck. It's not about the dollars and cents or the endorsements or something else. They play for each other. They play for the symbol, what they stand for. They play for the community. They play the game exactly how it's supposed to be played.
It truly is. And just the kind of character guys that are on this team. I think when you look sometimes at superstars and you look at somebody maybe like a Tom Brady or a LeBron James, and their life is so different than yours and than mine that it's hard for me to relate to the daily experience of a Tom Brady or of a LeBron James. But I feel like I can relate. I relate to Cody Eakin. Like, I get him. I understand Will Carrier. I get him. Colin Miller. Like, those are my people. And I think that the
John Merrill's your
John
guy.
John Merrill.
You're an Ohio State fan, but you love,
I love John Merrill, Michigan Wolverine. John Merrill is the coolest guy. And I understand those folks. And I think that's the way the rest of the team is. Like, they understand the personalities on this team because they're not a LeBron James. They're not a Tom Brady. And that just makes you attached to them so much more than you would, you know, this superstar that comes in with all the hype and all of the other attachments.
Well, and I'll go you a little bit deeper than that. By the way, we do have some interviews from some of the players. We still have our play of the game and player of the game and everything. But this is such a great story, and we're literally excited. I couldn't wait to get on the air today. We just came from the press box, came over here, and immediately wanted to start talking Golden Knights again. But I'll go even a little bit deeper than that. Some of those guys you say are the blue-collar, lunch-pail kind of guys. But the superstars on this team, James Neal, who we heard some things about and wondered what he was going to be like, has been more than accommodating, very professional, and a nice guy. I can relate to him. Marc-Andre Fleury, 3 Stanley Cups, the face of the organization. He's a down-to-earth, nice guy. He's got a great sense of humor and everything. Jonathan Marchessault, I mean, to a man, I literally can't think of one player on this team that I would not tell somebody on the street, yes, he really is truly a genuinely nice guy. It's not just something that we're saying on the air. It's not like we're a PR machine for the team. These guys, from the lowest guy on the roster in the front offices and everything else, all the way up to the biggest superstars on the team, and Gerard Gallant heading it all, and George Mifee and everybody else, Bill Foley, the owner, maybe one of the most humble, down-to-earth billionaires I've ever seen, they're all genuinely nice people. We had heard that coming in, but it's still amazing when you see it's actually true.
The only person that, or entity that just won't talk to me from the team is Chance, and that's because he doesn't have vocal cords, but he gives me a high five every time I see him.
Yeah, and by the way, did you see the mini Chance outside of Staples Center yesterday?
Yeah,
the
did.
Little video?
I
the
did.
Little kid with a Chance tail and a head on, and he's got 2 little of those hand whisk broom things, and he was doing the outside of Staples Center sweeping the
so
Kings
good.
Emblem before the game last night. So mini Chance, even the youngest kids that really don't even aren't cognizant of exactly what they're doing, they're still getting into it. And that kid, 20 years from now, is going to be able to look at that video and go, yeah, look at that. I predicted that when I was 6.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, just fun all the way around, and a really great effort by the boys last night, getting that 1-0 victory. Fantastic.
All right. Well, we do have player of the games and player of the game. Let's do some of them now. We'll get as much as we can before we have to step aside momentarily. Then we'll come back with lots more Golden Knights talk. But it was a great game last night, and well, I don't think you have to look too far to see what the play of the game was in a 1-0 game.
Play of the game, of course, the lone goal by Braden McNabb. Our play of the game brought to you by Best Mattress. Best Mattress, best service, best selection, best price guaranteed. Braden McNabb.
Carlson back to the attack. Here he goes to Riley. Smith across. Scores! Braden McNabb, the former king, and it's 1-0 Vegas.
Braden McNabb cashing in on the speed generated by Carlson and Smith. They found McNabb the trailer. Nice, beautiful open net to shoot at, and he hit it.
And by the way, we talk about this a lot, how people ask why there's 2 assists in hockey. Well, sometimes you could give more than that. Carlson and Smith had the assist that went on in the book. It was all brought up by a beautiful pass from Marchessault. So the line who did nothing, according to Drew Doughty in the game, got a lucky goal on a lucky play that they didn't even really know what they were doing, by the way, for the game winner in Game 3. Also, those 3 guys were instrumental in the only goal, the game-winning goal, the series-winning goal last night as well. And we got a little soundbite here from Braden McNabb after scoring that goal and being the play of the game.
Take you back to June 21st, you hear your name called by the Vegas Golden Knights. Could you ever have pictured this happening tonight the way it did?
Not really. No, it's honestly at that time you don't think of much. You're like, oh, like new team. You know, my focus was just making the team. So, no, to answer your question, no.
A lot of the focal point is placed on William and Jonathan, but you guys only allowed 3 goals in this series. What does that say about the defense of this team?
Yeah, we played well. You know, we used our speed. We used our gaps. You know, Flower, can't say it enough. He, especially in the third, made some unbelievable saves tonight. And you know, he's been rock solid. And, you know, everyone loves seeing how good he's doing because, you know, I know he's out there to prove some people wrong, too. And it's great. It's just great to see.
Braden McNabb there. Talking about the city, and that I still remember talking to him the day after the expansion draft when he seemed like he was still a little bit in shock or whatever, but seemed excited but a little bit nervous too, because he saw his teammates. They kind of looked at the board and they went, you know what, looks like we might be decent, but wow, everybody's saying we're going to be horrible.
And what I really took away from that is you think about Braden McNabb and the breakout year that he's had. He was the first guy that the Golden Knights committed to long-term, the four-year, $10 million deal. And his reaction to being on this team, his first thought was, boy, I've got to make this team. And that was the thing from the very beginning. Nothing given, nothing expected. I've got to go out and earn a spot on this team. That from the guy who got the $10 million contract, the first extension in franchise history.
He said that actually to a reporter. We didn't have it on audio, but a guy from L.A. had asked him about that. And he said, look, when I got here, we had a lot of defensemen. We had a lot of really good defensemen on this team. I mean, think about it. Lucas Spies is probably the number two defenseman on the team. And he hasn't played in a month.
They were ripped by the national media for having too many defensemen and being too defensive heavy and saying, what are they going to do with them all? George McPhee has to trade these guys.
And let's not forget, Braden McNabb was a healthy scratch earlier in the season for a couple of games right out of the get-go.
Shea Theodore started the season in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jason Garrison, who's got NHL experience, hasn't made it up to the club. So, yeah, I mean, they definitely have a wealth of defensemen. But we hear that not just from him, but Ryan Carpenter echoed those sentiments after the game last night and said, look, I'm just trying to still stay in the lineup. Even when you're in the lineup, it doesn't guarantee that you stay in the lineup. John Merrill, who's played very well in the first round series, he's bounced in and out of the lineup all season long. Brad Hunt hasn't scratched the lineup in the playoffs, although he was instrumental and was a big part of this team. It's difficult to make it into this lineup, and for some guys it's even more difficult to stay in the lineup because there is so much competition. One thing that nobody saw before the season started was the wealth of depth that this team had, and they thought that an injury to a crucial player might be absolutely devastating. Marc-Andre Fleury, obviously we've talked about him all over the place when he went down and the other goalies came up. But when Perron missed games, when Riley Smith missed games, when James Neal, when guys that you would think would be the crushing blow, the team just went on and kept on winning.
You think about Brandon Peary. Poor Brandon Peary scores all those goals down in Chicago, finally gets a crack at the lineup, and oh, by the way, scores three goals in two games and finds himself back in Chicago. You think about somebody like Timo Pulkkinen, and all Timo Pulkkinen has done has been fantastic in Chicago and hasn't even been a thought for this team.
Yeah, I mean, it really is amazing. But you know what? It's a fun ride. I just hope it lasts three more rounds. And at the end of it, wow, who knows how magical it could be. It's already a 30 for 30 at the very least. And I think beyond that, what this team has done. But it's not over yet. When we come back, we're going to hear from Jonathan Marchessault, Riley Smith, two of the guys who were instrumental. Also, one of our favorite players, Pierre-Édouard Bellemare. And we still have to get that player of the game. I'm not going to tell you who it is, but you probably have a pretty good idea. Lots more to come. Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, your home for the Golden Knights in the Valley.
Out they come on the left side, shoved forward. Here's Carlson, left wing. Through the circle, drop pass Smith to the back door. They score! Knights take a 1-0 lead. Braden McNabb from the right side scores against his old club. And now Theodore picks him up in the right corner. Theodore, the former Duck, going up against a familiar foe in Kopitar. He escapes to the slot. He moves down low. He shoots. Saved by Fleury. Oh, he got it with his left arm. Kopitar denied at point-blank range. With 3 seconds left, Kopitar tries to fish it out. Here comes the horn. It's over. It's a sweep for Vegas. The Knights beat the Kings 1-0. Four straight wins to start their inaugural Stanley Cup playoffs. The Vegas Golden Knights advance.
Bye, Felicia.
Oh, I love LA too. I love that they're out of the playoffs and they got swept in the first round by the Vegas Golden Knights. I guess Drew Doughty, well, whoever he may have been in a past life, we know it's not Nostradamus. Welcome back, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio. Frank Carnage, Clayton Hamilton, Chris Chapman. And, you know, Chris was talking, Clayton, about how windy it was on that drive there. I wonder if Mother Nature was just getting everybody ready for the sweep that was inevitable as well.
Yeah, just sweep them all out of town. Good old Los Angeles. My favorite part of it is flying over it on the way to Hawaii.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So you would do the thing of like, what's the best thing about like when Jim McMahon left Brigham Young University, and they said, what was the best thing about going to Brigham Young, and he said, leaving.
Yes, absolutely. I start to get agitated when I get to state line. As soon as I cross into California, I start to get irritated until I get back across the state line. But yeah, fly over it on the way to Hawaii, take a little peek out the windows, about as much as I need.
What's funny is Ryan is from Los Angeles, and he told me yesterday while we were sitting in Staples how much he hated the city. He stayed out in Chino, right? And he left his where he was staying at 9:15 in the morning yesterday to get there for an 11 o'clock skate. 10:40, he's calling me. He's like, I'm not going to get there by 11. I'm not going to get there by 11. He's like, it says I'm 5 miles away, and it says I'm still a half hour out. It's like, I'm not going to get there. I took the Waze. I used that to navigate. It literally made me get off the 10, go through the hood in East L.A., and then get back on the 10 like 5 miles further down to avoid all the traffic. It's awful.
My moment that I had to leave, I was about 22 miles away from where I needed to be. And I realized that if I had left at the same time as an elite marathon runner, that marathon runner would have beaten me by 6 minutes. And I was like, I got to go. I'm done.
Yeah, the marathon runner would have beat you by 6 minutes, but the old lady with a walker still would have tied you. Would have been a dead heat at the finish line.
That was the thing. I was like, an elite marathon runner can get there faster than me.
But by the way, I shouldn't be sexist. The old person with the walker probably would have still tied you. Well, speaking of tying, we didn't do any tying. There was one game that was tied, but they won that one in double overtime as well. But the guy who was certainly the player of the game, the player of the series, the player of the first round, Clayton.
No surprises here. Our player of the game, brought to you by Findlay Acura, is Marc-Andre Fleury. Findlay Acura in the Valley Auto Mall, the new definition of luxury. Marc-Andre Fleury.
Marc-Andre Fleury with that sparkling 970 save percentage coming in. Carter picks up a loose puck, a giveaway. Carter shooting, pad stop Fleury. Now Kyle Clifford gets a big hit. Muzzin steps up. He'll play it in front and a pad stop there by Fleury. Better second period start, but now Kopitar dropping it. Dustin Brown's in. Shooting stop by Fleury.
Marc-Andre Fleury just setting the record books on fire. What a performance. How he moves up on the in the history books for playoff shutouts, for playoff wins, the 0.65 goals against average, the 977 save percentage, unbelievable.
Yeah, and still the unassuming superstar and everything who gives credit to his defenseman in front of him and this, that. You know, it's so funny because I'm going to go back to the interview we played yesterday with Drew Doughty. And we're not just picking on Drew Doughty because you don't like him, because I respect the heck out of him, and he is a great hockey player. But it was so much me and I did my thing and this, that, and the other. If there's a person on either one of these teams that has the right to talk like that, it would be Marc-Andre Fleury. And he doesn't. Mm-mm. He just doesn't.
I was going to say 31 saves last night and a smile on his face the whole time.
Yeah, and shutouts in the first game and the clinching game, absolutely incredible. And you could argue it was the best statistical season that he's had in his career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Marc-Andre Fleury, media had a chance to catch up with him after that game last night. And here's that interview and talking about the win, L.A., and lots of other things.
It's nice. It's fun. You know, we have a good bunch of guys. You know, everybody works hard every night and everybody, you know, a lot of guys blocking shots for me, helping me out in front of the net. And when you win, it's always fun, you know. It doesn't matter what you do, but it's a good feeling.
Marc-Andre, the last time I saw you was the night you were drafted by this team. And I'm curious, if you could put yourself back to that night and now to this moment, and if it was even in the back of your mind that you could do this first season.
I don't know, lots has happened since then. You know, I honestly believe we could fight for a playoff spot, you know, at the end of the season. And what this team has shown over the season, what they're capable of, you know, I think it's been a lot of fun to watch, a lot of fun to be part of, you know. Really proud of my teammates and the organization, the way they handle things over the season, and obviously we're to be here right now.
Appropriate that you did it close to Hollywood, or is it like a script?
I guess still a few more games before it could be a good story. Yeah.
This first round sweep is pretty impressive.
It's good. It's good. You know, it was they're a good team. Right? There are a lot of bad runs there. Every game we're close. We're all one goal game, and it's good. Though. Everybody stayed patient in our game plan, played hard, you know, and paid off at the end.
Did I hear that right? You said you're still a few rounds away from it being a good story. It's not a good story yet?
I don't know. Americans tend to not make many hockey movies. If it's if it was football, maybe. But yeah.
When you've been in the locker room for series wins before, how did this locker room react to winning this series like they did?
It's good. You know, obviously it's moving up, right? We're moving up to second round, and it was, like I said, it was such a close series from the beginning. And you know, when you win those close games, it's a good feeling. It's fun, you know, and very rewarding at the end too.
Is this the best you've played in a playoff series?
I don't know. I don't know.
How about the last minute? There was a couple shots real close. How crazy was it right down the stretch there for you?
Yeah, we knew they were gonna, you know, keep pushing till the end, right? They pulled a goalie and they were buzzing around us for a while there. But the guys played well. They blocked a few shots, and that Brown at the end just got a little tip of the glove, you know. So it was. That's good.
Most experts would say in the playoffs that because you guys don't have a whole lot of playoff experience by man, that it would be tough matchups for anybody. But in this case, does your team speed make the difference that you probably could beat any team in a series?
I think a lot of experts were wrong about us right from the start and say that, so you don't listen to them. Just
but from this standpoint, though.
If you want to say our team was good and they played well, they skate well, and obviously I think we're a quick team, and all season long I think everybody contribute, you know, to our success. We roll four lines, 6 days of playing, and you know, it's I think that's what makes our strength. Everybody's contributing and adding to their success every night.
A lot of the talk today was about weathering the storm. How important was it to get out of that first period tie?
It was good, you know, like we thought, they came strong, right? They came hard and threw a lot of puck at the nets with a lot of bodies, you know, around me. But I thought we defended well. I thought in the second we took over and had the control of the game and the momentum.
I didn't see if you were still out on the ice. Did you hear the fans in the arena chanting your name after the game?
No, I couldn't hear.
It was pretty loud. It was
really,
pretty,
yeah? Oh, dude, I missed that.
How cool is that to have that in an away arena for a team like this, that the fan base is obviously brand new?
Yeah, it's. I think you can hear it in the national anthem, right, when they all yell night. It's pretty loud, right? And it's fun. It's fun. It's so so happy that people in Vegas are liking hockey, liking to, you know, and supporting us the way they've done it since the first game of the season.
What was said between you and Jonathan Quick at the end of the show?
It's a great series. You know, I told him I always love watching him, and he did well. He did well throughout the playoffs, and wish him the best.
Marc-Andre Fleury there talking about the sweep and a lot of other things. I love it when he says a thing of that it's not that it, you know, it could be a good story or whatever, that he doesn't necessarily think it's a good story. And our buddy Ken from Sinbin asked him, he goes, you don't think this is a good story yet? And he's like, eh, Americans don't really like to make movies about hockey. If it was football, maybe. But he thinks there's still work to be done. But you know what? That just goes with what he told us right at the start of the season. When we told him the vision was playoffs in three, cup in six, and he said, why wait so long? I think he wanted and expected a cup opportunity right in the first year. And here he is. That's actually within reach. As crazy as it is to say, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
It's not. And I think what he's referring to is if the book ends in four pages, then it's not nearly as good a story as if it ends in 12 more pages. And I think that's what he's looking for, the final 12 wins that they need to get this done.
All right. Well, you know, the entire team appreciates Marc-Andre Fleury and what he's done. And Riley Smith, a guy who, boy, is it nice to have him back in the lineup with Marchessault and Carlson again and doing what they're doing. And sorry, Drew Doughty, but yes, they were instrumental in helping sweep you, getting the game winner in game three, and all three basically being a crucial part of McNabb's game-winning goal. Well, Riley Smith had a chance to get with him in the locker room after the game last night as well, and he was asked at the start, how is it playing, and what do you think of that Marc-Andre Fleury guy?
He's unbelievable. He's been great for us all year, and he even stepped his game up in playoffs so far. So it's been, it's a key to our success. Obviously, this series, he pretty much shut them out completely. I think RD haven't gotten enough credit just for clearing the front of the net as well. I think they did a great job again tonight. He's key to this success of this team, and we got to help him out. Maybe put a couple more in net and give them a little bit of a cushion next time.
That third period, you guys just seemed to get a stick on everything that they were doing, every pass they were making, just maybe more so than the rest of the rest of the season.
I think we did a good job picking up their speed. They were swinging some guys back and trying to pick up speed, and I think we just did a good job picking that up and forced them to make plays in the neutral zone.
Riley, your assist on the goal for Birmingham, what did you see there, and then just walk us through that score?
Marshy made a great play, absorbed a hit, and got the puck out, and he opened it up for a 3-on-2. And then Carly was able to drag one guy in, and he made it pretty easy on me. Nabber, he was all alone over there, so the least I could do is get him the puck.
Four games here, all one-goal games. Does it give you guys a lot of confidence that you can win close, tight games like this, especially in the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, Flower's done a great job making key, timely saves. He did again right there in the third period. Late. Games are all going to be close in the playoffs. We expect that. I think we do a good job just not getting a little too anxious with the puck, but staying calm.
You talked about the defensive effort. You only allowed 3 goals the entire series. Is that even surprising for you?
Yeah. It's tough to do. Obviously, Flowers has done a great job backstopping everything. He's made timely saves again and again. But our D, they've made a lot of key blocks, and then they're clearing the front of the net well.
How special is it for Nabber to come in and get the game-winning goal in this series against his former team?
It's great. We're all really happy for him. He's a heart and soul guy on this team, and he's played great all season. So he's even stepped his game up in playoffs, which is great to see. And it was a great shot.
You know, it's interesting because I'm listening to that interview, and I'm thinking, okay, well, when we come back from this, I have to mention once again what a crucial part of the success of this team Riley Smith has been all season long. And then I'm thinking to myself, it seems like we say that about everybody on this team, but it's because they truly are a team.
That's funny. We were talking during the commercial break about which team probably suffered the most from the player that they lost, and we couldn't even come to a conclusion. Was it Florida losing Marchessault and Riley Smith and Gerard Gallant? Was it Minnesota losing Alex Tuch and Eric Halla? Was it Pittsburgh losing Marc-Andre Fleury? And on and on and on.
Yeah, and the one that would jump to a lot of people's mind, and Chris mentioned it, is it William Carlson in Columbus? You could say if they knew how to use him properly, maybe it was, but would he still be relegated to a third or fourth line and checking and not being used properly there, especially with the way that Panarin and the rest of their offense goes? So it is amazing, but it's also amazing, and again, we have to give complete full credit and marks to Gerard Gallant, the job that he's done putting these guys together and finding the right opportunity for them to succeed. George McPhee picked them. But Gerard Gallant decided where they fit best, and I'm going to toss that man a Rubik's Cube, and he'll probably finish it in about 2 seconds.
Yeah, it's a dynamic duo of the two of them. But there's one other guy who gets lost a little bit in this creation of the team, and he deserves a whole lot of credit, and that's Kelly McCrimmon, because he has a wealth of knowledge when it comes to young players, their skill sets, and how they translate to the NHL. And for him to have as big influence as he has had, it has been a wonderful reflection, not just on him, but on George McPhee, who's willing to listen to him and take his input. But Kelly McCrimmon's footprint is all over this team, and he sometimes gets lost in all of the discussion.
Yeah, I agree with you. One guy who has not gotten lost from the team standpoint, if you've listened to this show at all this season, is Pierre-Édouard Bellemare. He does so many things that go up in the books and don't go in the books, and so many different crucial things to winning, whether it's blocking shots, assisting on goals, killing penalties, chipping to wherever he's asked to. And Chris Chapman had a chance to catch up with him the other day after the game last night as well, and here's one of my favorite players on the team, Pierre-Édouard Bellemare.
Your line this series was very visible. You guys were doing a lot of stuff, creating a lot of things that maybe don't show up on the score sheets, but is that just a case of getting William back into the fold and you know, the three, you, him, and Nosek, back together again?
Well, I think that's so far. I mean, during the whole season, whoever was jumping for whoever's role has been doing a good job, and the line was kind of working with the same dynamic, I think. And tonight, I felt like it was a tough game. Not a lot of room, not a lot of open plays, and I felt like the coach needed us to play kind of a solid game, not creating any mistake, trying to create a little bit of chaos. And I felt like through the entire series, we've been pretty good at doing it. We have a moment in the game where we can be a little bit stronger, but all along, I think that we play the kind of game that the team need. Doesn't matter that we're not on a score sheet. We don't need to be on a score sheet as long as we win 4-0.
The other day, Saturday, you told me about the atmosphere, the fans in Vegas. Could you guys hear them, and were you guys able to really feed off the fans here in LA?
We couldn't really hear them because, I mean, obviously the LA fans were a greater number.
Yeah.
But we heard, I mean, during the nationalism, and you could tell that all the bench kind of like, you know, here we go, here it is, like, you know, got excited about the fact that there were so many of our fans here. Like I said a few days ago when we were in Vegas, it didn't feel like our fan kind of surround the LA fans. And now we are here, and then, like, from the beginning of the game, we can hear, like, I don't know, maybe 2,000 of our fans or more, and that was exciting to show that we have people a little bit everywhere.
They say you don't really build a rivalry with a team until you play them in the playoffs. Do you feel that this series was enough to kind of build that rivalry with Los Angeles?
Well, obviously. I mean, do you think next year they're going to be happy to play us when this has happened? You know that, but, I mean, it's the closest team to us also, you know, so rivals are built because of that too. And I mean, I think a lot of people that were in Vegas before probably were LA fans just because LA was the closest one, and now suddenly we have a team and put a lot of people move to supporting us. So that's also one of the case where the rivalry happened.
And there you have it, Pierre-Édouard Bellemare, and just a great guy, a class guy all the way around. And there you have it. We are the rival of the Kings. And the fact that we swept him... Yeah, they're not going to like seeing Vegas next year. They definitely have an axe to grind.
Right, a rivalry goes two ways, and I think we looked at L.A. as the rival. They sort of brushed us off, still holding animosity towards Anaheim and San Jose. But after this sweep, I think we are clearly in the target of L.A. for next year.
By the way, I'm not telling the NHL what to do, but you don't have to give us back-to-back games with Arizona to start the season. Unfortunately for Coyote fans, they're not the rival.
Yeah, I would be curious to see when the national schedule comes out. It was a little tough for Vegas to crack into the NBCSN lineup. I wonder if they will crack into the NBC proper lineup on the Saturday showcase next year.
I would imagine they're going to be in a lot more televised games next year besides just AT&T Sportsnet, who has done a great job.
Fantastic.
And we'd like to thank all their guys for all the help that they've done this season as well. All right, when we come back, believe it or not, there's other series going on. We'll take a quick look at tonight's action. Then we'll wrap it up here, getting ready for T.C. Martin. Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, your home for Golden Knights hockey. Welcome back. Wrapping it up here on a victorious Wednesday. Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Frank Carnes, Clayton Hamilton, Chris Chapman. And, you know, we know one team going on to the second round, but there's a... 8 more teams in action tonight, Clayton.
There are, and some have some injury updates. Philadelphia and Pittsburgh at the beginning. Sean Couturier going to be a game-time decision for the Flyers. He left practice early on Tuesday because of an apparent injury. He collided with Radko Gudas, so we'll see if he plays tonight. Patrick Hornquist, though, will not play for the Penguins. Day-to-day upper body injury. Defenseman Chris Letang was not at practice, just getting a maintenance day. He is expected to play, and Dominic Simone will replace Patrick Hornquist on the top line with Sidney Crosby and Jake Guentzel.
All right, and that game is at 4 p.m. Penguins Flyers. Also, you have Tampa Bay and New Jersey going at it at 4:30. Then the later games, Nashville and Colorado at 7 p.m. Pacific time, and then the Ducks and the Sharks. We'll be taking one of those on. That game's at 7:30 if you want to scout the next opponent.
Sam Girard not going to play for Colorado. He's going to miss his third consecutive game, so he will not play against the Predators.
All right. Well, we have the luxury of sitting back and watching a little bit of hockey now. We don't have a game for a while, but as soon as we know when it's going to be next, and of course, looking forward to going back to City National Arena and checking the boys out next time they hit the ice for a skate.
Yeah, game was 1-2.
All right. Coming up next, T.C. Martin. I think he's going to be talking some Golden Knights and a lot more as well. You've been listening to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio. Have a great evening.